Poets say science takes away from the beauty of the stars, mere globs of gas atoms. I too can see the stars on a desert night and feel them. But do I see less or more? A gorgeous hypothetical question there from the late, great Nobel Prize-winning physicist Richard Feynman. What a chap. And just last week, the prizes named after that eminently quotable professor were announced, with an Australian winning the Top Gong for the first time. Actually, the first Southern Hemisphere scientist to win the prize too. Dr. Amanda Barnard, a computational physicist at CSIRO, received the Feynman Prize in Nanotechnology. Think of it as the Nobel Prize for Nanotech. Amanda also happens to be the first woman to win the prestigious prize since it was established over 20 years ago. And she joined me in the Life Matters studio a little earlier.
Thank you for having me here.
Congratulations. How does it feel?
It's been a whirlwind 10 days or so since I heard the news, and have tried to keep it under wraps until the embargo lifted. But I think I'm slowly starting to settle down.
What do you win, other than incredible, you know, accolades from colleagues worldwide?
Well, I must admit that when they told me, I think I flatlined a little bit, and I don't remember a lot of that conversation very well. I believe I win a little bit of money and a little bit of trophy of some sort.
Fantastic. Look, nanotubes, nanowires, nanoparticles, this is the stuff of matter. It's the stuff of your work too as a computational physicist. Remind us, what does nanotech encompass as a field?
Nanotech is actually quite a broad field that covers a lot of the traditional areas of science. And the people that work in nanotech are physicists and chemists and molecular biologists and engineers, mathematicians, all dealing with pieces of matter around a millionth of a millimetre in size. And all the properties that we're accustomed to in our everyday life change when we get that small. So it's a very exciting field to work in.
How do they change in ways that we find interesting or useful?
We can see completely new properties develop which were are completely unfamiliar. For example, silver, which we wear as jewellery and it's completely benign, is antimicrobial at the nanoscale, so that's interesting. Gold is also a benign metal which we wear to make ourselves look pretty. And it's a great catalyst at the nanoscale, and it's of course not a catalyst when it's in larger pieces. So those are some new properties. The other thing is that some of the properties that we are familiar with, the ones that we're accustomed to using in our technology, becomes really enhanced when the particles are very small.
You won this prize particularly for your pioneering work on diamond nanoparticles. What happens to diamond at that scale? What captivates you particularly about the properties of diamond at the nanoscale?
Well, in a diamond ring, the surfaces of the diamond is, well, diamond is covered with a sort of molecular coating, but it's characteristic of the same structure all the way through the stone. When the particles are very small, there's so much surface area and so little of the core of the particle that the structure of the surface can change entirely, and it reconstructs to a more like structure like graphite. And graphite, of course, has totally different properties to diamond. So you have something with where the properties on the outside are different to the properties on the inside. And we can try to use that to our advantage in having this kind of duality of function.
Incredibly, some of your understanding, your fundamental work, has already had implications for work in chemotherapy. How does nanotech relate to chemo?
Ooh, nanoparticles are going to be a great new way to deliver drugs in ways that are a lot more patient-centric, are a lot more flexible in terms of not just mode of delivery, but dosages and controlling how the drugs are released. I had no idea that diamond particles would be useful for this when I did the work. For years, they were a solution looking for a problem. And it was really, really satisfying to find out that the first real application in this area was something that could improve people's lives.
So would it actually be using the nanoparticles to deliver drugs in a more focused way?
Yes, this work is being pioneered by Dean Ho in UCLA. And he found some years ago that by combining some chemotherapeutics that are already in the market and are already FDA approved, and mixing them with the diamond particles, they create a kind of mesoporous structure This enables the drug to be trapped within a network of diamonds due to a type of interaction which, with the work I did, I discovered. And as they're inside the body or at the site of a tumour, the drug is released slowly through one kind of pore of this structure at a time.
Wow.
So it's a slow release and a sustained release over many months. And so quality of life, of course, improves because patients don't have to keep going back week after week to get a massive dose of
And their hair might not fall out because it's a much more precise and targeted approach to chemo.
That's right.
Which is, you know, such a shotgun approach at the moment, it seems.
Mm. And his results showed that you need like 10 or 11 times less drug to deliver the same treatment. So that's much, much more gentle on the human body as well.
Dr. Amanda Barnard is with us this morning from CSIRO. She's a computational physicist who has been recognised at the international level with a prestigious prize, the Feynman Prize in Nanotechnology, essentially the Nobel Prize for the nanotech field, named after the late great physicist Richard Feynman. She's the first Australian, first woman to win the prize, an incredible achievement. You have said that one of the reasons you love your job, Amanda, is because science is reinventing itself all the time. It never becomes complacent. Just describe why you like that mindset. What attracted you to that way of thinking about the world as you were entering science as a young woman, as a girl even?
Well, I guess one of the reasons why I did science, I was seduced by the mathematics, I admit it. I love that part of it. There's a reason why I do theory and computation. And going into further education beyond my undergraduate degree in physics, nanotechnology seemed like an uncharted territory. And, of course, that's incredibly attractive to someone who doesn't really know what they want to do. Well, this area is completely open and you can reinvent it the way you want.
Plus you get to play with supercomputers.
Plus I get to play with supercomputers.
Every day.
Every day.
You know, people have legitimate concerns around nanotechnology and potential risks, mm-hmm. particularly these little particles used in sunscreens, cosmetics. Some wonder if without more thorough, careful investigation and the application of the precautionary principle, that they could represent the next asbestos-type exposure risk, particularly mm-hmm. for those involved in manufacturing and nanotech particles. And I think you've done some work exploring potential risks of nanoparticles. What have you looked at?
I did do some work some years ago trying to see if we could predict what kind of configurations of particles would be the ones that we might want to avoid, identifying here is the size, shape and composition that would be where we should target our future manufacturing efforts. And that was a really interesting area. It also revealed that a lot of the regulation mechanisms that are in place actually are doing a pretty good job of protecting us from harmful effects of any technology. Those regulations don't specify that something must be a nanoparticle. If something causes cell death, it causes cell death. It doesn't really matter why. And it protects us against that cell death.
Well, cell death is one risk, I guess.
Yes.
But there are other risks.
For example, Are we
doing enough robust work looking at risk of exposure?
There's a lot of work going on in this field. It's a very rich research area for academics and for researchers in the government and industry space as well. And it's an area where there's a lot of global cooperation. In the last 5 years, there's been a huge, an enormous amount of research that's been published and shared in this space. And we're coming a long way, yes.
Mm.
It is getting attention. It is seen as globally important. And the research community is working together on this very well.
Well, that's music to my ears, because there was concern at some stage that the sector was, you know, in the field of nanotechnology was being promoted without the same sort of promotion of risk analysis and good, you know, benchwork.
There was a period of catch-up, but everybody's on board.
Amanda, you're the first woman to win this prize, and we know that women are underrepresented in science and technology in Australia, certainly in the mathematical sciences, certainly in physics, certainly in computational physics, mm-hmm. and certainly in senior ranks of science, where women often move sideways after they have children or they just can't get traction on family life, work life, etc. Mm. How do you view that dilemma for the field? Do you feel it's significant?
It is significant. I think diversity in any field is really important. And from my own perspective in science, whenever we're working on a project as a group of collaborators, we often get stuck on different points. So you need the diversity of people on the team so that somebody can always get us over that barrier and move us forward. So
diversity
think it's really
means that we think about problems differently. I
mean, yes,
I've always thought that some people think, oh, no, gender's got nothing to do with the way the way we might come at a problem.
I hope I think differently. It gives me a unique value proposition.
How do we respond to the challenge, though, particularly at the level of girls? Because, you know, you, like me, you probably were promoted. I remember women coming in, women engineers, promoting their wares at school, and it made me dogged about going to do engineering. But that wasn't quite enough to keep the numbers.
Yes, I think there's still definitely the challenge of women having to carry a lot of the burden of home life, and this, when you've got to make a choice, one or the other, sometimes the science or the engineering doesn't always win out. But I've kind of been involved in this space and the women in STEM area for a few years and have been thinking about this. And I think that instead of targeting exclusively all of our efforts in helping the minority, the women in this case, maybe we should start thinking about encouraging more men to take some work-life balance and to spend some time at home, because that's another way of making it equitable. I don't think men think it's maybe as acceptable, perhaps, and maybe we need to change the way we treat them in this space and make that more acceptable for them.
Yeah, and when that happens, change
then
happens.
We're all taking a career break and we're all on the same plane then, aren't we?
Yeah, yes, and that's the very issue we talked about earlier on the show. And, you know, one of the concerns is that men often want to talk about flexible options at work, but they are nervous about raising it with their manager in case they aren't considered the best person for the job anymore, or somehow they're backing away from their commitment to the role. It's a big issue.
Yeah, it's important to make sure that when people take a career break, or for any reason, but family, of course, is a very big and important reason, that their careers don't suffer as a consequence of that.
Mm. We hear a lot about the brain drain, and you've worked in some of the top laboratories in your field around the world, from the Argonne National Laboratories in the US to the University of Oxford. You came back to Australia. You're now working at the CSIRO. What made you return?
Family reasons, yeah.
As simple as that, or as complex as that?
As complex as that.
Do you think Australia is doing enough to pull back its big talent like yourself?
That's a difficult question to answer. I think Australia can provide a more supportive research environment for science and technology that would make it more intrinsically attractive, regardless of what programs that we put in place. It's kind of like if you build it, they will come.
And then you have to make sure the career structures are there to keep those young
career
researchers, which is a real problem in Australia at the moment. Ongoing casual contracts for researchers rather than getting them into their own labs. For young people listening, or their parents, thinking about, you know, perhaps the negative publicity careers in science have been receiving because of the plight of early career researchers, what would you say to those young people thinking, well, should I do a science degree? Should I think about becoming a scientist?
I think that doing a science degree prepares you for more than just a scientific career. It teaches people how to think a certain way, which will give them an advantage in a number of other domains as well. I actually quite like the idea of having more scientists in business, in government, in policy making, in all kinds of areas. Wouldn't the world be a better place if more people thought like us?
I love the way you think. Look, congratulations again on the Fineman Prize. What a wonderful thing, and all the best with your work.
Thank you, Natasha.
Dr. Amanda Barnard, a computational physicist at CSIRO. Yes, the Southern Hemisphere's first winner of the Fineman Prize in nanotechnology. First woman too. And you might want to send your congratulations to her on our Facebook page. I've popped a post there. And you can tweet us too at RN Life Matters. Anything you're hearing, spread the word, share the audio, you know what to do.